I'm happy now to welcome to the program Erin Mattson. She is the Action Vice President of the National Organization for Women, talking to us by telephone in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
And joining us here in the cafe are Dana Middleton and Diana Thatcher from the New Mexico and Santa Fe chapters of NOW. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We love being here.
Nice to have you back on the show. Erin, let's talk about Roe versus Wade. This is the center of women's right to choose abortion. What is it, and to what extent has it been eroded in the last 37 years since it came to be essentially the law of the land?
Well, it's been eroded extensively since it since the initial decision, which we will be celebrating around the country with NOW chapters in roughly the next two-week period. There are different dates associated with that. Number one, one of the main restrictions that we've seen put on women's fundamental right to access abortion care is abortion funding restrictions. Under the auspices of the Hyde Amendment, which barred federal funding for abortion, this has disparate impacts in different communities. For instance, it hits Native American women on reservations. It hits federal employees. It hits Peace Corps volunteers. The list goes on, and it's applied differently. And that was just massively expanded under the Affordable Care Act, which passed last year, which brought that into the private market for the first time. Another thing that we often see restricting women's right to choose is often built more along the lines of what you were talking about earlier, things at the state level, either based on non-scientific concepts that really originate in the anti-abortion rights community, things like fetal pain, which is not medically proven, being used to justify restricting access to abortion before the point at which the Supreme Court has restricted it. Things like, in addition to that, you know, forcing women to view ultrasounds before abortion, before receiving an abortion, forcing counseling, forcing waiting periods, forcing parental involvement. The list goes on and on and on. One thing that I would just like to note is that about 90% of anti-abortion rights legislation is passed at the state level.
What is the relationship between a woman's right to abortion and the right to birth control?
Well, they're absolutely inextricably entwined. I mean, not only do they come out of the same basic notion in the Constitution, which is the right to privacy, the fundamental right to privacy, but also the opponents of abortion rights are actually the exact same people who oppose the right to contraception. And so you see that played out in a couple ways. For example, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which has 14 paid lobbyists on Capitol Hill, although they are not operating under the proper IRS requirements at this time, they actually had a huge hand in writing the law in terms of the health care law and the abortion restrictions. That they are the same group who are fighting access to contraceptives under health care. And it does give persons some pause that there was no directive in that law to restrict access to contraceptives when, and then quietly later the Obama administration issued regulations that did not cover contraceptives as part of preventive care. So you wonder if there's, you know, some back dealings there. Another thing, and I think just the broader point, is there is an extreme anti-sex agenda out there, and oftentimes abortion rights is where the focus is. But the people who would restrict that also make efforts to restrict access to contraceptives.
How do you understand the anti-sex bias? It seems like this just the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, given the fact that virtually everybody has sex from their, let's say, teens or early 20s through their adulthood, and somehow there's an expectation from a very small group of people that are against abortion and birth control that either they shouldn't, or if they do, they should have 10 or 15 or 20 children. But a politically minuscule number of voters actually both believes this and lives this philosophy. Why does it have any traction whatsoever?
Well, it's my belief that one of the major factors that we're seeing is, you know, the Republican Party is largely the party of big business. And specifically, there just aren't that many people who make $1 billion a year who can get excited about the tax cut that they just got. And so oftentimes what you see is that party playing into ideas that come out of really more of a religious fundamentalist worldview in order to ensure that vote. So the way I see it, often a lot of what this is about is kind of the marriage between corporate big shots and then the religious voting bloc.
Can you explain that a little bit more? In other words, I get that most people aren't billionaires and aren't going to get excited about the tax cuts, but why do so many people who themselves, whether they admit it or not, are having sex and using birth control, why do they not want people to either do it or admit it?
Well, there is tons of shame built around sex, and certainly I can't unpack it in just a couple words. This is something that we've all been working on for quite some time, and particularly it has disparate impact on women, that women are most often subject to shaming and restrictions around sexuality, although, you know, we're just half of the population. There's really nothing special about that, why we should be singled out. But I think that, you know, when you talk about why sex is so much of the focus, I think, again, it's this simple way to ensure a large voting bloc. And I think, you know, you look at something like John Boehner having his Pillars of a New Majority document, and he identified five pillars of a new majority. And the first one that he, the first pillar that he cited was his desire to be the most pro-life, or as I would say, the most anti-abortion rights House Speaker in U.S. history. And, you know, at a time when unemployment is rampant and, you know, there are real challenges that our country is facing, it's just baffling that women is where he turns first.
When you talk about, when he talks about a new majority, what percentage do you know the polling data of people in the United States are actually pro and anti-choice?
Well, a majority of the population does support legal abortion. That isn't to say that the majority necessarily supports unfettered access to abortion and no restrictions, but at a basic level, we are a pro-choice nation.
Another irony to me is that the conservative movement, one of whose central principles is individual rights, is interested in this particular case in limiting individual rights.
Well, it's absolute hypocrisy. I mean, there's really no other way to put it.
To what extent are young women, women of your generation, women in their 20s and 30s, born after Roe versus Wade, mobilizing to make sure that these rights are not taken away from them?
Well, we're seeing a lot of interesting, innovative stuff. For example, recently there was a campaign on Twitter that started with a hashtag, I had an abortion, which is kind of an interesting technological update to the Speak Up. You also see a number of young women participating in organizations like Now and groups that we often go in coalition with, you know, working alongside intergenerationally. But, you know, you are seeing some new organizing online, and it's exciting.
There's kind of a media image that younger and older women, the women who fought for Roe versus Wade in the first place and then the next generation, aren't really connected. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that this is a story that the media has been pushing for a while, and it usually makes me pretty upset when I read these stories, because my experience has not been one of feminists of different generations fighting with each other. Certainly there are some differences, but I think they're over-exaggerated in the media. And really the question that I have is, why is this being pushed? And my sense of the situation is that, you know, in a climate when Roe v. Wade is continually being eroded and we have fewer abortion rights seemingly every year than we did the year before, in the sense that we only go backwards. I think, you know, there's a temptation to create a narrative, well, the people who are most affected by this, which is you know, women of childbearing age, don't care, which isn't the truth.
Women of childbearing age are overwhelmingly using birth control. Is that not true?
That's absolutely true. You know, 70% of women between the ages of 15 and 44 are sexually active and do not want to become pregnant at this time. You know, and of those who are sexually active, 98% have used a contraceptive at some point in time. So this is, you know, an overwhelming majority. It's very sad when you kind of couple that information with the fact that contraception, like abortion care, often gets singled out to be not covered.
I think there's yet another larger issue in all of this, which is, what is the role of women? And I think one of the big differences, and we've talked about this a little bit before on this program, but one of the big differences between so-called conservative and liberal or conservative and progressive ways of thinking about people's roles is that conservatives want a really polarized difference between men's and women's sex roles, whereas liberals and progressives tend to think, well, women and men should both be able to choose whatever they want to do with their lives, whether that be, you know, being a computer programmer or being a mother or being a bank president or any of that, not based on gender.
That's, you know, and that's absolutely correct. And I think it's an undertone that we have to pay close attention to as this Roe anniversary, as we're in that season right now. I mean, one of the basic fundamental questions is, who gets to participate fully in society? Who gets full rights? Who gets full responsibilities in this society? And, you know, we're still in 2011 struggling with giving women full rights as citizens, and that's absolutely played out in the struggle for reproductive justice.
We're talking to Erin Mattson from the National Organization for Women in Washington, D.C. There is something called the Personhood Amendment. What is that?
Well, there is a group, Personhood USA. One of the things that we're seeing at the state level is ballot initiatives that would declare that life begins immediately at conception. Not only would this outlaw abortion, which is not constitutional and would certainly become a court challenge, but it also would outlaw a number of fertility treatments, even most forms of contraception. So it's very, very serious. We've had it happen twice recently in Colorado. In both cases, Colorado voters strongly rejected it. Personhood USA, which is sponsoring this, is now boasting that they have an operation up and running in all 50 states, and we expect that this will be on the ballot in Mississippi this year and may be coming to Florida in 2012.
You are from Minnesota, and there was an issue that you took on in Minnesota about whether pharmacists have the obligation to fill prescriptions. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, there was a group, Pharmacists for Life, that started a nationwide effort to really get to deny access to contraceptives. Again, sort of this link, notice that they call themselves Pharmacists for Life, and yet what they are attacking is the pill. And basically, most corporate pharmacy chains have something in the books that allows pharmacists to usually single out contraceptives and choose whether or not they want to, you know, fulfill the doctor-patient relationship or step in the way and say no. And so I have worked in Minnesota. When I was Minnesota Now president, we led up a Birth Control Now campaign in which we were protesting outside of CVS, in which we hammered out a compromise with Walgreens in writing that would require them to provide in-store access to birth control, which is incredibly important. Basically, what most of these policies do is they say, well, hey, the pharmacist doesn't have to give the pill if they have personal beliefs. I have struggled to call them moral beliefs. Personal beliefs that disagree with basic science. And so that woman should then go on a wild goose chase from store to store until somebody wants to fill her prescription. What they agreed to do was to ensure that that woman got her her prescription filled in store, even if that required a pharmacist coming from another store. We also worked to clarify what Target is doing. They have a policy that only singles out emergency contraception. And so we participated, I say with a smile, in their annual Holidazzle parade where people dress up in lights. And so we wore wreaths and stuff, too, and let people know and gave them tools to contact the CEO. We also worked at it at the state legislative level and helped to block an effort that would have made it permissible for pharmacists to deny contraceptives and receive no penalty from the state pharmacy board.
So where is Target at now?
They are still in the same place, and I don't know if you saw the other story that was out recently, but yes, they did give a whole bunch of money to vehemently anti-gay, anti-lesbian candidate who lost for governor, who is also extremely anti-immigrant.
What is the National Organization for Women working on right now in Washington, D.C.? We're going to go to New Mexico in a moment, but what's now working on your end?
Well, so much. As you can see, there are many things going on right now. One, we are we're really gearing up for our annual road vigil outside the Supreme Court, as well as we currently have more than 30 chapter activities around the country listed on our website at www.now.org that will be taking place even into early February. That list is growing, so please check it out. We're also working on partnering up with the National Eating Disorders Association for National Eating Disorders Awareness Week in late February under our Love Your Body campaign. We are working on putting together some materials that should be shared soon about how the Hyde Amendment, which bars federal funding for abortion, hurts women, and providing action kits for our chapters. And many, many more things, but we should let these wonderful women from New Mexico speak. I'm so excited to share a show with them.
Excellent. Well, Erin Mattson is the Action Vice President of the National Organization for Women. Now, let's turn to New Mexico, Dana Middleton and Diana Thatcher. What are the actual realities of women, young women in particular, in New Mexico, as regards to birth control and abortion rights?
Well, it really does come down to a lack of sex education. I mean, I think in the last 10 years of my 30 years in New Mexico and having had two daughters, going from not having even any condoms in the high schools for a while, now that's happening. But I think lack of education about sexuality and birth control is really a big problem. And also, I think because there are so many people in the Catholic Church in our state, and also a lot of really extreme Christian groups that, and I think you brought it up earlier, it's really around sex, and it's a denial that people are sexual, and that it starts as early as it does, and that we need to have more discussion with our children as they grow up, which not a lot of families do. And we have more teenage pregnancies in the state of New Mexico than we care to have. And really horrifying is a statistic that says that we have more second pregnancies with the same young woman. So she not only has one baby, then she goes on to have yet another baby. So
while she's still a teenager.
Yes.
Let's talk about New Mexico. The legislative session has just begun last week, and there are a couple of bills that are being introduced during this session that would affect women's reproductive rights and realities in one way or another. What's happening?
Yes. First of all, I think the notification bill or the parental consent bill are two different things, and in the past, it's my understanding that they go into committee, and because we have some great allies in other organizations in Albuquerque, and those bills don't make it out of committee. So they're never really brought up as a bill.
Now, so they come up on a regular basis?
Every year.
Every year.
This year, they're going to bring up the parental notification bill, which means that the young girl that becomes pregnant, then she can't really obtain an abortion unless her parents are notified. Now, that would be different than her parents having to give consent, which would even be worse. So we believe in the pro-choice movement that it's a dangerous thing to have even parental notification because, well, I'll give an example. One year, one of the legislators was, it was a man, and he was in favor of the parental notification. And one of our people went to him and said, hey, you know, I know the relationship you have with your children. And I know that if your daughter became pregnant, I'm quite sure she would come to you and discuss it, and you would be part of her decision making. But not all families are like yours. And it may be a situation where it's a cousin, or you didn't know that she had
a
boyfriend.
A cousin
that got her pregnant. And the girl does not want to discuss it with anybody. So she hasn't maybe come to you for some very good reasons. It could be incest. It could be many things. And so we believe that that decision is up to the person.
Even if the young woman is a teenager.
That's right.
Now, there have been some states that have passed parental notification bills.
Yes.
What happens? What are some stories of things that have happened in those states?
Well, I know of one horror story from probably 8, 9 years ago. I think it was in Ohio. There was a teenager who became pregnant, and she and her boyfriend were very, very close, and they were so ashamed to tell the parents that they went to the next state because it was illegal in that state to get an abortion without parental, I think it was actually consent. But anyway, they went to the next state, they obtained an illegal abortion, and they drove back the next morning to the house. He dropped her off, she went up to her room, and the next morning they found her dead. She had bled to death. And the parents were so horrified, they ended up coming into the movement to be a pro-choice family. They said, you know, basically, we can't believe our daughter didn't trust us enough to come to us, but they were a very, very Christian family, and she must have felt that she couldn't tell them. So this couple, 8, 10 years ago, were going around the country and talking about their daughter and how parents should be more aware of their kids and if they're sexually active. And absolutely, this couple came out against both parental notification and parental consent.
There are, of course, other cases that have been documented of very abusive parents.
Right, exactly. And I think that's probably more common than anything.
Yeah, another factor which plays into this is that the judicial system is rather overburdened as it is, and many judges are against this law because it would add more work to their caseload. Apparently, the young teenager would have to go before the court and explain why she didn't want her parents notified, and then she would get a waiver from the court. And all of that, of course, is hugely embarrassing for the girl. In small towns, you can't keep something like that secret. You couldn't even keep it secret here in town. And also it delays the, if
exactly.
She's going to get an abortion, it pushes the date of her abortion further into time.
And makes it more difficult and sometimes puts it out of the first trimester.
Exactly.
That's right.
We're talking to Dana Middleton and Diana Thatcher from New Mexico NOW. What are some of the other bills that are being considered this legislative session?
Okay, well, another one is the fetal pain bill. And these same folks that are anti-choice would like to see a fetal pain bill. And that would be that it would call the fetus, really, it's the personhood bill. And that they feel pain. So then they could outlaw an abortion on that
issue. Yeah, they're talking
issue.
About 20 weeks
yeah.
as a cutoff point.
Yeah.
So a woman wouldn't be able to have an abortion after 20,
after
weeks,
20 weeks
because the fetus
would
might
know.
Feel pain. Is
yes.
there a scientific basis for
no,
that?
Evidently no. not. Evidently not. Now, the other one that's important in our state because of a recent crime when the young man went in and shot his girlfriend and killed the baby at the same time, they also would like to see an unborn victim of violence bill go up and also become a law.
And it's, again, it's a fetal personhood thing,
right.
sort of coming in the back door.
And so the purpose of that bill would be
overtly to punish criminals extra if one of their victims was pregnant, but the covert purpose of the bill would be to take a step toward outlawing any kind of abortion?
Correct.
That's right.
Correct. Because if it's a person, if you know, if it's two counts of homicide, then that's a person under the law.
So it's just chipping away.
Now, you are having a rally for reproductive choice on Tuesday, the 25th of January. That's tomorrow at 11:30 at the Roundhouse, on the east side of the Roundhouse. What's going on?
Yes, well, that's what we're doing on Tuesday at 11:30. It's Roe v. Wade Day. And so in 1973, women all over our great country were able to get the right to all reproductive services, including birth control and abortion, safe and legal. So last year we had a really nice turnout, and this year, this Tuesday, we're having some wonderful speakers from different churches here in Santa Fe. And our coalition actually comprises some great groups. Planned Parenthood, of course, in Santa Fe, and some folks from Planned Parenthood in Albuquerque are coming. The Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, New Mexico ACLU, the Southwest Women's Law Center, and others. So it's going to be a great event. Will be hard to miss. Last year we froze out there, so we're hoping for some better weather. It might be nice. But we're celebrating 37 years of women having a choice about our bodies and our reproductive choices. That's it.
And women and men of all ages, ethnicities, and political stripes are invited to join.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Dana Middleton and Diana Thatcher are with the New Mexico and Santa Fe chapters of the National Organization for Women. They can be found on the web?
Yes. Well, actually, an email would be good for me to get information about the rally coming up. It's newmexdana@hotmail.com. And we do have a website for Santa Fe Now, santafenow.org.
Thanks both so much for being here on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, we're so happy to be here.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.